So I just have a very short list of bullet points. And this list could be exponentially longer. But just some kind of bold fog things that stick out to me that I would like to cover. A chronological timeline, if you will. A timeline of inconsistencies and absurdities and lies in the official narrative of Charlie Kirk's alleged assassination. Charlie Kirk, the 31-year-old conservative activist and Turning Point USA co-founder, who we are told was fatally shot on September 10th, 2025, at this outdoor speaking event at Utah Valley University in Orem, Utah. Now, the official government narrative is primarily sourced by the FBI and Utah state authorities and other federal officials, which portrays this alleged assassination as the act of a lone 22-year-old gunman called Tyler Robinson, who we are told was motivated by disagreement with Kirk's anti-transgenderism rhetoric. He was arrested 2 days later, and then he was criminally charged with capital murder. Now, he wasn't arrested because Pam Bondi's DOJ located him. He wasn't arrested because Kash Patel's FBI located him or Utah law enforcement officials. He was arrested and charged after he turned himself in alongside his father, who we are told is a law enforcement officer of sorts, alongside this unknown, unnamed U.S. Marshal or other federal agent, and alongside some unknown, unnamed faith leader of an unknown denomination, a minister, a pastor, or a priest of sorts. And then during the charging document release, prosecutors cited this text message exchange between Tyler Robinson and his alleged transgender lover and roommate. And what we've seen, snapshots of Tyler Robinson's family members' social media, if Tyler Robinson even exists at all. And at this point, I'm starting to question whether or not, I have to be honest, I'm starting to question whether or not Tyler Robinson from Utah is really a person. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But the bullet points that I have that we can get into, we could start off with the unexplained hand signals by the security personnel just seconds before the shot. But going back to Tyler Robinson, before we get into all of this, this narrative has just been riddled with gaps, contradictions, unsubstantiated claims that undermine the credibility of everything that we have been told from the FBI, from forensics analysts, from the government, and from law enforcement officials throughout various jurisdictions. And Tyler Robinson, again, he turned himself in. This is a kid who we are told grew up, again, with a law enforcement father, seemingly from what we can see on snapshots of these social media profiles, it looks like a Christian family, that they went to church at least on Sundays. And just one day he decided, no, I would like to go and deny God and deny Jesus Christ. I would like to shove aside all of our conservative, you know, MAGA enthusiast type political background and upbringing. And I would like to go have sex with mentally ill people who chop off their penis and pretend to be a woman. And there are forensic discrepancies that highlight potential staging or even cover-ups or even the involvement of multiple actors, which has fueled my skepticism and which has fueled widespread skepticism. And in the immediate aftermath of this shooting, at approximately 2:15 p.m. Utah time, we can see from video footage of attendees that show two individuals, one in a white hat, one in a black shirt, behind Charlie Kirk, making deliberate hand gestures toward him as he responds to a question about transgender mass shooters. Now, the official narrative says that these were just routine security checks, that all of these third base coach hand signals, they were all just routine hand signals. But there's been no breakdown of who these individuals were or what their affiliations to TPUSA or to Charlie Kirk were or the meaning of the signals. None of that has been released by the FBI, despite the FBI having full access to all of the full event audio and video. And you have to take into consideration that what your eyes are showing you is real and that you should believe what you're seeing because that is real. And that these hand signals resemble kind of a spotter coordination that you see in professional hit jobs. For example, these are very similar to the signals from the 1963 JFK assassination, and that's per declassified church committee reports. And then later, Kirk's security team claimed that six officers were present, but yet nobody neutralized the threat from the roof at 142 yards away. Now, I have been present when gunshots have been fired. And although I do understand pandemonium, and I do understand panic, and I do understand crisis situations, and I do understand chaos, and I also do understand acoustics to a certain extent. I'm not an expert acoustics forensics analyst, but I do understand that when you're inside of a bowl like that, or when you're surrounded by other buildings, you could hear the original shot and then you could hear its report. But generally speaking, typically in virtually every situation that I've ever been involved with, from indoor shoots to outdoor shoots, both in a controlled environment and in a natural environment on the streets, hearing shots in real time being fired in a metropolitan area surrounded by buildings, it's typically pretty easy to determine the direction in which the shot originated from. And then you have the audio forensics that indicate that the shot came from closer range and from a completely different direction. Now, we had John Cullen on the program, and he has been kind of leading the charge in all of this. He was here with us live on Friday of last week. And then I've been watching a lot of his demonstrations on YouTube. He's got a partner that he works with, and they're demonstrating all of this. And the audio analysis of the attendee videos that have been shared on X and amplified by forensics experts shows that the gunshot's acoustic profile, or the muzzle blast echo, is consistent with a source that would be 50 to 75 yards away, not the official 142-yard rooftop sniper position. And the official government narrative from the FBI, from the feds, from Utah state law enforcement officials is that a single shot came from the rooftop. There has been no FBI released ballistic trajectory report. There has been no FBI released acoustic modeling to corroborate the distance or the direction of the shot, despite day one forensic capabilities. So, for example, these forensic capabilities were used in the 2017 Las Vegas shooting investigation. So this suggests either a second shooter, or it suggests that these events or that event may have been staged. And then you have, and I'm trying as hard as I can here. I'm really paying attention to the tone with which I'm delivering this and the information that I'm citing, because I don't want anyone to believe that I'm just some whacked out kook or insane crazed conspiracy theorist who just wants to point to and blame the Jew or Israel for virtually everything that happens, despite the fact that that's true. And that when you break everything down, you can show irrefutable, indisputable, physical and circumstantial evidence and historical precedent that confirm that whenever there is a public assassination of a high profile figure or some kind of a world leader, that Israel's culpability is pretty much predetermined. So I just want to preface all of this by saying, I know that blaming Israel has been called insane in Charlie Kirk's assassination, but I also believe that if you are to look at the fact that this government will lie to you about a magic bullet and lie to you about Charlie Kirk's Superman-esque like steel frame, his bones of steel that just stopped this 3-inch high velocity, high powered projectile that was deployed from the muzzle of a .30-06 Mauser firearm. If they're willing to lie to you about that, and they have, because it's impossible. This is a round that will penetrate and come out the other side of creating an exit wound in animals like elk, moose, bear, possibly even elephant. This is a projectile that you can view ballistics tests on YouTube. There is a litany of these things. I mean, there is a limitless, seemingly limitless supply of videos that go over the forensics capabilities of the 30-06, 180 grain, 150 grain, 190 grain loads. And all of them, no matter the size of the load in this 30-06 projectile, penetrate through multiple levels of cinder block. Cinder block would be used for the exterior construction of a basement, for the exterior construction of a school. For example, at Utah Valley University, a lot of those buildings were probably built with cinder block, meaning that that round could penetrate that wall multiple times. So you could have a wall that was two cinder block levels thick, and the wall would still be penetrated by both levels by that 30-06 projectile, by that ammunition, at 150 grain, at 180 grain, at 190 grain. But we are to believe that Charlie Kirk's bones are stronger than two layers of cinder block. Charlie Kirk didn't look like a guy that was really in the gym every day. Not that it would matter for bone density and structure. But what I'm saying is, Charlie Kirk's body looked like that of a prepubescent twink, okay? He wasn't like some man of steel. This wasn't Dwayne The Rock Johnson before whatever happened to The Rock happened to The Rock. And again, not to say that that would make any difference at all whatsoever, because we're talking about bone structure. We're talking about bone density. And then you have the removal of evidence, the contamination of a murder scene, of a crime scene, that was never taped off. It was never secured. You didn't see any of that yellow crime scene or caution, do not enter tape. You never saw any of that. But what we have seen plenty of is footage of unauthorized personnel, which Candace Owens has said she knows who this guy is. And by all accounts, reports confirm that this was Charlie Kirk's right-hand IT guy. This was his AV guy. This was the guy that was in the studio for Charlie Kirk's daily show every day, that would handle technical difficulties, that would handle troubleshooting, that would handle audio setup, that would handle, you know, the set and acoustics and, you know, video demonstrations like the screen that I have behind me. I'm not capable of doing all of these things in this studio, and I would imagine that Charlie Kirk relied heavily on, you know, other professionals to take care of those needs for TPUSA. He was operating on a budget of $140 million annually, so he could definitely pay for people to do this. We've also heard stories about people who didn't go to college because Charlie Kirk said, instead of going and getting a college degree, why don't you just, as a young Jesus-believing Christian, come and work for TPUSA? Come work for me. And there are various different posts on X from those people firsthand that that's what they did. And so you have this guy who travels with Charlie Kirk, who's close with Charlie Kirk. And I know the makeup of these types of relationships because I have them. Now, I don't operate on a $140 million annual budget. We actually just barely get by. But I do have these relationships with an audio video guy who comes in here on a regular basis to address different technical issues that I'm having, or if I desire to have some sort of expanded capabilities through my OBS systems or through the various different, you know, ADEM hardware or software or switchers or, you know, Rodecaster type microphone, audio cable cord, in-ear monitor, different issues that I'm having here. And this person becomes like a really close ally because you do indeed rely on them to make your broadcasts seamless and to have the best audio quality or video presentation that you possibly can. And if I were to go do outdoor speaking engagements on a regular basis, like Charlie Kirk was doing, no other person, by the way, was doing what Charlie Kirk was doing, which was spreading the good news, spreading the gospel, pointing to the cross, and introducing Jesus Christ to college-aged Zoomers who need Jesus Christ and who a lot of them are armed with. And a lot of them, you know, have a relationship with Jesus Christ, which is a big white pill here because there are a lot of very politically engaged Zoomers and Gen Xers, you know, college age and just above, that really do have a close personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And they put the cross, they put Christ at the center of everything that they do, which is you know, one of the things that makes me very optimistic about our future here, both spiritually and politically speaking. But you have this guy who would be considered unauthorized personnel or unauthorized event staff handling Charlie Kirk's body. And you have this other guy who would be considered unauthorized on a crime scene, immediately flooding the zone in the area. You have the transport of Charlie Kirk's freshly dead body or bleeding body, still alive, being thrown into, you know, an SUV rather than an ambulance, and immediately leaving the area before any medics or law enforcement personnel could arrive. There's a lot of reasons why you don't do that. Now, are there exceptions to that? Could I imagine that, you know, possibly because the people that were around Charlie Kirk who love him, who work with him, who admire him, who are attached to him, would act to be a lifesaver in that moment, that they would say, you know what, given all of the people around here, given all of the different security measures and traffic blockades or barriers that have been put into place and, you know, different routes to control the crowd and to create escape, you know, we just don't have time for medical to arrive here. We've got to take him ourselves. Well, two things about that that I would say are wrong. Number one is you don't have the medical knowledge unless there is a legit, like, military medic that's on Charlie Kirk's staff, and there may have been. So that, but also from a staging perspective, when you're going to have an outdoor event like this, and given the fact that Charlie Kirk, although be it was a moderate, let's just be honest, Charlie Kirk is a moderate conservative. And we've been over this on the program. He wasn't fringe. He wasn't hyperbolic. He wasn't, you know, really penetrating the uncharted waters that are politically or socially unacceptable or untouchable kind of topics that cause most people to just like shudder in fear when you bring them up like we do here every day. That wasn't Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was a moderate. But Charlie Kirk was apparently fringe or extreme enough, or the budget was just big enough to support private security everywhere that he went. They felt the need to have Charlie Kirk protected by bodyguards and purportedly by other, including Secret Service measures, because Donald Trump just recently had appointed Charlie Kirk to a military board along with General Michael Flynn. And so it would be safe to assume that some kind of government subsidized, taxpayer funded security would be provided to Charlie Kirk because of his appointment to this military board. And that would be Secret Service, the same Secret Service that allowed similarly a lone gunman called Thomas Crooks to go undetected while he climbed atop a steel pole building or pole shed in proximity to a campaigning President Trump. And again, as a lone gunman, shot Donald Trump allegedly in the ear. So I don't know about the removal of the body. I don't know about the removal, the transport and the SUV by Charlie Kirk's team. All of that seems pretty sus. But then you have the removal of this CCTV camera that was positioned directly behind Charlie Kirk's head. And apparently that camera was later confirmed stolen by UVU security. Now, again, the official narrative is that in order to provide rapid treatment or expedient treatment to Charlie Kirk, or rapid evacuation to provide him the quickest way possible to the hospital for medical care and attention, was that his team brought him. Now, standard protocol requires ambulances for gunshot victims because for legality reasons and criminal prosecution, those laws and those guidelines are put into place because officials, predominantly law enforcement officials, want to ensure that chain of custody remains intact. And per Utah EMS guidelines, private transport would risk contaminating that evidence. So there would be, for example, no GSR swabbing en route, no hospital records or staff statements that were released on treatment or death, the declaration of death fuels a whole lot more claims of this rushed pronouncement of death without a full autopsy. And we can get into the autopsy thing. We can talk about how autopsies, the actual process, just based on the research that I have done. And again, I'm not a medical examiner. I'm not an embalmer. I'm not a funeral director. I have witnessed and have been through plenty of, you know, celebrations of life or the process of, you know, somebody dying from the moment that they're dead until the wake or the viewing and then the funeral or the celebration of life. I've been through a lot of that in my 45 years on Earth. And this would be probably the most unprecedented set of chronological different inconsistencies and absurdities and anomalies that I have ever seen. And all of them are consistent. So back to the autopsy, it takes on average 3 to 10 hours to perform the autopsy itself. But if you ask Grok, or if you ask even better, uncensored AI, you will learn that on the average, it takes 3 to 10 days for the autopsy report to be completed. And then you have this whole weird kind of set of circumstances surrounding the rapid body custody by the Trump administration and this anomalous casket flight. Within just hours, J.D. Vance, President Palantir, Vice President Peter Thiel, reportedly took possession of Kirk's body via this private jet from UVU to Arizona. And the flight data shows this disappearing private aircraft near the scene, which was completely wiped from public ADS-B tracking. And the official narrative of that was that the family requested dignified transport. Well, according to Utah state law mandates a public autopsy for all homicides. So it can be confidential, but releasable in redacted form, but it has to be publicly confirmed autopsies. But none of that has been disclosed. This is non-standard handling. Suspicious deaths are not handled this way. Well, what are some other recent, you know, non-standard handlings? Well, you could talk about Epstein's 2019 transport. And this would imply the suppression of forensic details like wound anomalies. For example, unverified claims, I will say unverified claims, of a device near the entry wound in these videos. So you could talk about the microphone. We all know that these people are capable of blowing up pagers. And then you could talk about Ben Shapiro saying that he was going to pick up that bloodstained microphone. I think Charlie Kirk's body was likely still warm. And Ben Shapiro, the Jew, was already getting ready to swoop in on TPUSA and just take over. And then you have the immediate arrest of these decoys or these suspects, including this screaming person of interest, this Zinn. And then you have the police scanners and the witness reports of these two immediate detentions. So there was that elderly demonstrator, George Zinn, who was quickly released, who was screaming, shoot me, while being restrained. And the official narrative is that, well, these are just irrelevant bystanders. There was no follow-up at all into the screaming person of interest, described as disruptive, but not linked to Tyler Robinson. Well, I don't know that anybody is linked to Tyler Robinson. To be quite honest, I don't even know if Tyler Robinson exists. So these screams seemed, at least to me and apparently to a whole lot of other people, that this was like a diversion away from wherever the real shooter was. Hey, look at me. Hey, look at me. Shoot me. Shoot me. George Zinn, by the way, was also present during 9/11. The odds of these occurrences happening and being at these events is like 6 million to 1. But they're talking about the chaos that this created, allowing this black clad figure, this official shooter, to flee unseen, despite the fact that he would have gone through neighborhoods where, you know, you would expect that almost every house would have some sort of CCTV. All these people have Ring cameras and Ring doorbells. But he was able to run across that rooftop and jump down like Spider-Man with a rifle barrel in his pants and carrying a backpack that had the receiver and the stock and the scope in it, when the backpack that he was carrying would not fit those things in it. And there is no CCTV footage of this shooter, Tyler Robinson, fleeing with a rifle. So despite around about 3,000 attendees, many of them filming, despite the fact that the building that Tyler Robinson was allegedly perched on top of being brand new and outfitted with the latest state-of-the-art, fully capable video surveillance cameras, no verified video shows the described suspect, Tyler Robinson, dressed in all black with a black bag and a black mask and aviator sunglasses, carrying a long rifle, running across the rooftop. And the official narrative is that Tyler Robinson, the reason why you're not seeing that is because this 22-year-old, who we are told adopted this far-left radical liberal ideology and who was in love with trannies and who hated Charlie Kirk's anti-transgenderism rhetoric, had enough proficiency with firearms to disassemble or break down that firearm on the roof. And then somewhere along his flight that was riddled with adrenal rush and all kinds of hyperinflated external circumstances that any person would be dealing with after committing a public homicide, a public assassination, a public murder in front of thousands, 3,000 at least people live. Billions of people passing around this footage as it was allowed to proliferate on the internet, which is another inconsistency. It's another anomaly. This was graphic footage. It was footage that showed Charlie Kirk, a depiction of Charlie Kirk profusely bleeding, shooting blood, projectile bleeding, gushing out of the front of his neck as he slumped over and, you know, fell out of that chair. The internet can censor graphic content. Content that, you know, social media platforms like Meta, Instagram, Facebook, or Elon Musk's X, content that these people decide that they don't want you to see, it gets removed from public viewing capability. You just can't see it. It gets removed, and every time that it's re-uploaded, it's instantaneously removed. You cannot propagate that type of material on the internet without the consent of those who are controlling the levers of censorship. And for whatever reason, the powers that be wanted to make sure that Charlie Kirk's assassination was viewed by as many people as possible. So the description in real time that could be picked up by police scanners as Tyler Robinson was able to evade this crowded and surveilled area, it all just defies logic, unless he had accomplices. It defies logic regarding his wardrobe changes, which are not evidenced by recovered clothing or GSR tests. So why don't we have any of that? Then you have, if we're going to continue in chronological order, you have the Israeli media reports that were the first to report Charlie Kirk's death before United States official confirmation. That seems really weird. That was something that I jotted down and put in all bold. An Israeli news outlet, Ynet, announced Kirk's death around 20 minutes before the United States authorities, for example, the UVU police, citing unconfirmed sources, and the official narrative, what this was just a coincidental leak. Well, Kirk recently had public tensions that we've been over on the program many, many times with pro-Israel donors. over America First pivots. And InfoWars host Alex Jones claimed that days prior, Kirk feared Israeli assassination. That was Harrison Smith. There was no official FBI probe into foreign intel involvement, despite John Solomon from Just the News reporting foreign elements in these briefings. So you've got briefings from people who are saying there was absolutely foreign intelligence agencies involved with all of this, but now we just have case closed. It was a lone gunman. It was a tranny chaser. It was a mentally ill, you know, liberal, radical, pro-tranny, 22-year-old lone wolf gunman. Don't worry about initial reports of foreign intelligence being involved with any of this. And then there was Kash Patel, who gave these in-custody, suspect in-custody announcements and then retracted them. At around 5 o'clock Eastern time, Kash Patel posted, quote, "We have the subject in custody." 3 hours later, it was retracted as error. So the official narrative here is that that was just miscommunication. And this aligns with the decoy arrests, but precedes Robinson's identification by 48 hours, which contradicts Governor Spencer Cox's same-day statement that the perpetrator is at large. Well, Patel later claimed definitive leads within 12 hours, yet no progress updates, eroding the trust with everyone that was looking at what was happening because everybody desperately wanted to know what the fuck was happening. And then everyone started to echo the FBI's botched Las Vegas shooting transparency. So there's a lot of speculation there. But then you just move on to physical things. And this is what I was talking about when I said you have to be able to trust what your eyes are seeing. Okay, so let's just look at the wardrobe and the discrepancies in the gear that Tyler Robinson was carrying in the surveillance footage. There was FBI-released hallway or stair CCTV footage at roughly 2:20 to 2:40 p.m. Mountain Time, which shows this figure in a black hoodie with an American flag patch, wearing Converse lows, and carrying a backpack, but there was no visible rifle disassembly tools or extra clothing for this alleged rooftop change to evade capture. And despite the fact that we've seen the footage where this person that they're calling Tyler Robinson is running across this rooftop and jumping off like he's Spider-Man, there's so many things about that that are absurd. Number one, why don't we have the footage 6 seconds, 60 seconds, 6 million seconds, 60 minutes before we see this footage that has been allowed to propagate in its very blurred and digitized, murky and muddy type form, despite the fact that the cameras that it was shot from are highly capable. And because the building that Tyler Robinson was running on was essentially brand new, the cameras that that building was outfitted with would have been the latest and brand new camera technology. The officials tell us that this shooter changed outfits 2 to 3 times, including back into his shooter gear before he surrendered. This is absurd. There were no recovered discarded clothing garments. There were no GSR or DNA tests. There was no backpack contents logged. And we see these mirrored aviators for anonymity. You know, the gray man tradecraft that this footage shows all of us. They don't show us amateur panic. They don't show us a panicking suspect. As a matter of fact, what we see later is a very calm and collected Tyler Robinson having a hot treat snack at his local Dairy Queen. Now, biometric data suggests that this person was aged 20 to 24 years old, but drilled posture is inconsistent with a lone radicalized student. Do you see what I'm saying? When you're looking at the footage of this guy walking around in the midst of all of these other 3,000 attendees, you just don't see the posture of an amateur, rattled person who's going to, or just has been, on a roof to assassinate this public figure from 200 yards or 143. And then you have other anomalies, like the Amazon book on Kirk's assassination and this predictive ex post. There was an Amazon book that was titled The Assassination of Charlie Kirk, which appeared with a September 9, 2025 release date, which would have been pre-event. And when everybody started pointing at that, saying, hey, because people were obviously searching for Charlie Kirk's death and assassination, and the algorithms popped and tied it to this book and gave everyone this Amazon link where they could see, well, just yesterday, on September 9th, somebody published a book that literally described Charlie Kirk's assassination. And as everybody pointed that out, it was like, no, you crazy conspiracy theorist, that's not true. And then that listing, that posting on Amazon was edited to post date and remove the book's original posting date of September 9th. This has never been addressed by the FBI. This has never been addressed by Utah state officials. This has been completely ignored. People have reported on this. Nobody has addressed this. Nobody has given an explanation for the fact that this book that told us about the assassination of Charlie Kirk existed the day before we were told Charlie Kirk was assassinated, and we were allowed to see video of an alleged assassination of Charlie Kirk in front of 3,000 students at UVU. Well, does this mirror predictive programming in past events? For example, the lone gunman, the pilot pre-9/11, or separately, does it address the X account that posted on September 9th, something big happens when he visits Utah? And that was in no way investigated as foreknowledge? Nobody wanted to pay attention to that. The FBI didn't think that that warranted any kind of investigation at all. And then you have the suspect identification and arrest. Now, again, I just want to remind you, I'm not going through these things in this order based on everything that I have. I'm not giving you a list of everything that I have been thinking, because everything that I have been thinking, it's a lot. So I'm just trying to give you some of the very, I guess, mainstream investigative benchmarks that have been discussed regarding this alleged event on September 10th. And you have this mismatched rifle description and its image. The ATF reported that this rifle was found in the woods. And it was reported that this rifle was wrapped neatly in a towel or a blanket, and that Tyler Robinson had very carefully placed this rifle and all of the evidence right out in the wide open for people to locate, for law enforcement to locate. And he was apparently watching as investigators or squads were looking through the woods, or were looking for evidence, or were looking for the shooter. And during that time frame, he was repeatedly texting his alleged tranny lover and giving all of these step-by-step accounts in paragraph form. So the ATF reported that this rifle was found in the woods and was a Mauser 98 30-06 bolt action firearm, which was wrapped in a blanket and engraved with pro-trans anti-fascist memes. And they released a picture of a Remington 700 synthetic stock. So immediately we had a discrepancy between the image that was released and the description of the firearm that we were told was located, that was wrapped inside of this towel and carefully placed and stacked on top of all of the other evidence, neatly wrapped in a bow by this lone gunman, this tranny chasing tranny lover Tyler Robinson. And what's the official narrative on that? Well, typo. It was a typo. But no ballistics match to the fatal bullet. The rifling and the grooves, that's all unconfirmed. The engravings seem to be pretty on the nose, almost too on the nose for motive, suggesting that this was all just planted. They were all props. And the absurd claim that this shooter allegedly reassembled and dumped this weapon post-disassembly, yet there were no tool marks and there was no serial trace. And now it's being reported that this firearm, another 1 in 6 million chance, is a firearm that's untraceable. Now, I could get on my soapbox and I could go through a list of all of my experience in dealing with firearms as evidence and all of the different times that I've been in a courtroom and all of the different times that I've read prosecutorial reports or that I've read law enforcement submission for charging consideration. In other words, a police report. I could talk to you all about how traceable firearms actually are. If you think that you're going to get away with a crime using a firearm, chances are you're not. Unless, of course, those people who are responsible for investigating and identifying the shooter and the weapon are interested in concealing who the shooter was and what the weapon was. And then you have this Tyler Robinson's whole persona and the family. For example, Robinson's grandmother. She said that there were no leftists in the family. She said that she never saw Tyler with a gun. So Tyler's grandmother says, I've never seen him with a gun. And we were told about the text messages that, again, were written in very odd, very suspicious paragraph form to his alleged trans lover that we've never met, that we don't know, that we've never seen a picture of, who we've never heard from, who was apparently cooperating with the FBI. Who was describing that this was his grandfather's gun and that his father, who's a police officer or sheriff's deputy in some capacity, we are told, would be looking for the gun that day, would be missing that gun, would want to know where that gun is. If this is a gun that's used for hunting, that gun is usually probably taken out just by personal experience. Because I train with firearms all the time, and I would hope that people do more than this, what I'm about to say, but unfortunately, most people don't. Most hunters don't touch their firearms during off season. They get them ready, they get them out, they break them out just before hunting season, they go to the range, they sight them in, they get all excited, they go to deer camp, and they hold their gun throughout deer camp. And that's it. And then they put that gun away. Unfortunately, this is the way people handle their firearms. They should be training a lot more. But they don't. So if this was, in fact, a Tyler Robinson that hunts, then it would be plausible that Tyler Robinson's grandmother would have seen him with a firearm in his past because, allegedly, this was his grandfather's firearm. And even if it was the maternal grandmother saying this and it was the paternal grandfather's gun, they probably know each other. They probably share family existence. They probably coexist. They're family. Mom and dad have been together long enough to at least father and mother and raise a 22-year-old. So in 22 years, you would expect that the paternal grandparents would know of the existence of, or at least communicate in some way, if not be completely close with, the other side. And if this is my grandson who hunts, even if I don't hunt, I've likely seen videos or I've likely seen pictures or I've likely heard conversation at least and been told hunting stories where I could at least mentally picture my grandson with a firearm. But she never saw him with a gun. That was her quote. Quote, never saw him with a gun. I'm sorry, but somebody who never holds a gun, or even if, let's just say grandma is a complete kook, a grandma who is suffering from dementia and just doesn't remember, a grandma who just tunes out all of the hunting stuff and doesn't pay attention to the 2 weeks out of every year that Tyler Robinson was in fact holding or possessing or using a firearm for the purpose of hunting in Utah, big game, because that's what you would use a 30-06 round for. You would use a 30-06 rifle loaded with anywhere between 150 and 200 grain ammunition for the purpose of taking down big game. And in Utah, you would think mule deer, you would think elk. These are big animals. They're a lot bigger than Charlie Kirk. Their skin is thicker. Their bones are bigger. Their bone density is more. So even if, let's just say, Tyler Robinson's grandmother is a complete whack job who doesn't remember what she used to brush her teeth with this morning, but Tyler Robinson did, in fact, hunt big game with a 30-06, and he was proficient enough to hunt 2 weeks out of every year. That kid is not climbing up on top of a roof at 143 yards in front of 3,000 people in broad daylight, under stress in a crisis with an elevated heart rate, and pulling off that shot. The odds of that happening, I haven't asked AI, I haven't done an analytical breakdown of the odds of that happening successfully, but I would say close to 6 million to 1. And then Governor Cox says that the family said that he was more political recently and that he was criticizing Kirk. This guy was an unaffiliated voter who had an inactive status, but records show no party affiliation. And then you have the early leaks that claims that he was a Democrat. Those were debunked, but yet still Donald Trump blamed leftist violence prematurely. And there was huge inconsistencies with all of that because that clashes with the calm and competent shooter profile. And the family confession circle, the dad and the minister and the U.S. Marshal post-escape, it just completely defies operational security. It defies OPSEC in every way possible. And the only way that we knew about this shooter's identity or existence or what this guy looked like was when these suspect photos were released, but they weren't released for 12 hours. And then we have these shooter Discord manifesto issues. The FBI held Robinson's photo for 12 hours before Patel's release. Now, the official narrative of that was OPSEC, operational security. But the absurdity here is that that manifesto, which was tied near the site and destroyed but pieced back together, and a 5-week Discord plan that included funding for the rifle, does not line up with "this was my grandfather's rifle," which is what was said in the text messages that were allegedly written by Tyler Robinson to his transgender, unidentified, never before heard of or heard from, never pictured or identified trans lover. Now, Discord says, yeah, no, there was never any server data. There was no chain of custody for the screenshots. There was no chain of custody or substantiation for the motive of anti-trans hate. And the unlinked engravings explicitly. All of this are blatant, bald-faced lies by the government. Not just the bullet. All of these things, and I think I've been through about 12 very key instances chronologically as we learned these things and as everybody very intentionally was confused by all of the information that was being released and then contradictory information, and a lot of people automatically attribute all of that to chaos. Well, it's just confusion. It's just mass hysteria. Charlie Kirk has been assassinated. Yeah, I understand from an emotional perspective that originally there would be some inconsistencies, but the expectation would be that the officials would get that right. That the officials would say, no, that's wrong. They would show the proof that they have, and then they would stick by that. In addition to that, if there is a manhunt going on for the person that just shot Charlie Kirk in front of 3,000 people in Utah, why would the FBI hold these suspect photos for 12 hours? Why wouldn't they want, if they had a suspect at large who would be considered armed and extremely dangerous, why wouldn't they want the public to know who they are just because of public safety alone, let alone the opportunity for anybody who stumbled across this Tyler Robinson to be able to clearly identify him? Maybe because Tyler Robinson doesn't exist. That's a whole nother detour. But these people, these other persons of interest, they were just cleared. They were just cleared without explanation. There was a third person of interest photo that was released of this black clad figure. And then that person was just released. And the official narrative on that one was, nope, Tyler Robinson was acting alone. Well, that's a lie. He wasn't acting alone because there were two decoys plus a third suggest coordination. Because there were now three suspects making a scene, causing a disturbance, delaying law enforcement. That suggests coordination. And there was no probe into this alleged trans terror cell that we were told about. None of these things are even possible, much less plausible or probable. None of these things could possibly be true. A 22-year-old novice shooter who at best handles that .30-06, which allegedly, according to unconfirmed reports, according to the lies, the completely fake and made up text exchange that was not authored by Tyler Robinson, that was inauthentic. And that was published by the New York Times, by the way, that this was like a recreation of the text. Why can't we just see the text? Well, you know why you can't see the text, because they don't exist. And they were written by some boomer in law enforcement type slang and vernacular. But inside of these text messages, you have Tyler Robinson, who seems super calm. Calm enough that he leaves this assassination site and he goes to Dairy Queen to get a treat. He's so bothered by the fact that he, as an expert marksman, a guy who handles a firearm once a year for a two-week time period during hunting season to go for mule deer or for elk or any other variety of big game that a .30-06 would be intended to take down, that this guy was so professional and so calm and so collected that after all of that, after being able to climb on top of that rooftop completely undetected in front of 3,000 people on a bright sunny day wearing all black, and he was carrying that backpack and he was carrying that disassembled Mauser rifle, the barrel of which was inside of his jeans pocket, his pant leg. I don't know if you know this. Gun barrels don't bend with the knee when you walk, and so obviously you would see that. And the limp wouldn't match the limp that we've seen on this grayed out, blurry, murky, digitized surveillance footage that appears to be from a drone. It's elevated. I mean, I guess it could be zoomed in from some Ring device that was on top of somebody's rooftop for whatever reason. But none of that matches. And this guy yet was able to do all of that completely undetected. He was calm. He was collected. He was a professional hitman. He was an assassin on that day. He woke up as a 22-year-old disgruntled pro-trans leftist liberal who rejected the teachings of his father and rejected the religious doctrine of his mother and father. Rejected the minister who, by the way, later he must have regained some sort of trust for because he turned himself in alongside of this minister. Then he wanted faith again. And a lot of people do that. They don't cry unto Jesus until they're dying or in some really big trouble, which is unfortunate. But there he is on that rooftop. And there he is with that firearm and in all of his marksmanship training in all of his ninja assassination training that he was able to covertly complete outside of the purview of his family and his grandmother, who had never seen him before ever with a gun. There he was, finally in his position after evading everyone. And there he was on that rooftop with that Mauser 30-06 bolt action with a scope that was positioned in such a way that if he did fire that firearm, he would have had a black eye at minimum. Probably a shattered eye orbital, shattered socket. But nope, there he was. He was there. He was ready. He was calm. He was breathing. He was collected. And then he waited. He waited for that transgender mass shooter question. He waited for the signal. And he took that miracle shot, that one shot, with an elevated heart rate, taking into consideration the windage and elevation and trajectory of the high-velocity round that was going to come out of the end of that 30-06 delivery system, and that 3-inch bullet and the projectile inside of it after that exploding gunpowder activated would send that 2,000-foot-per-second round hurling toward Charlie Kirk with dead-on precision and accuracy, hitting the carotid artery and then hitting Charlie Kirk's bones of steel. His bones of steel. His Superman structure. And in an act of heroism, up until he took his last breath as the blood gushed from his neck, Charlie Kirk, up until his final moment and final breath, saved lives because of that Superman impenetrable steel frame structure by not allowing that bullet to pass through. Do you have any questions? Do you have any questions about any of that? Why would you? That's what the feds tell you happened, so that's what happened. And then you have Laura Loomer talking about trans terror cells and making all kinds of claims about these cells being around all over the place. You have the J.D. Vance, Stephen Miller, funded networks allegations without any evidence, of course. And then you have, chronologically moving on, the events of September 16th through the 22nd, which is the charging and the motive claims and the ongoing probes. No gunshot residue, no DNA analysis, no geodata forensics. None of that has been released. No gunshot residue or GSR from Robinson's hands or his clothes. No prints, no DNA on the rifle or on the blanket. No shoe or soil matches from the rooftop. But the official narrative is that this investigation is ongoing. Day one tests are standard. FBI labs process this type of information in minutes, hours at most. Device pings and IP logs that I have done myself, hunting for fugitives, knowing how to ping a device. They could confirm that that rooftop presence actually existed, but they have been withheld. The charging documents instead cite this text exchange, this confession that he made while he was on the run, while he was changing clothes multiple times, while he was disassembling this Mauser firearm, putting the stock and the receiver and the scope inside of this backpack, along with multiple different changes of clothes, while he was shoving that barrel down his pants leg once again, in 60 seconds after he fired that shot and before he began running and jumped down without being impaled by that barrel. Two-story drop. I'm not telling you to do this, but I'm telling you to imagine putting a gun barrel in your pants and then jumping 20 feet minimum. And landing on your feet without hurting yourself, without killing yourself. But there has been no hard scientific data that supports any of this. No forensics, no DNA, no prints, no fingerprints, no footprints, no gunshot residue confirmation or analysis. These things are standard. And remember, early on, we were told that this was a politically driven hit. And then Cox later said, you know, this was a disagreement with Kirk's takes, and that this was a lone actor with no left-wing ties. But then Trump and Vance pushed the crackdown on left-wing terror cells like Antifa. This cross-ideological conspiracy, originally it was the Groypers, then it was video game nihilism. And then the celebratory attitude for people being fired. This is all used as pretext for silencing dissent. And I predicted this on September 10th when Charlie Kirk was shot. I was here in this room and I was walking out the door. My sister was here, who also works for my company, because I don't have a $140 million budget. Not to say that Brittany's not qualified for her position, because she is. But if I had a $140 million budget, I'd hire somebody better. I'm sorry, Britt, but I would. I don't have that. And so I was walking out of the studio. We were preparing for an in-studio guest in the uncancelable room, which is down the hall. And that person, I believe, was in the snack room or the break room or the conference room, the meeting area, sitting on a sofa or something. I was walking outside. It was really hot here. And I was walking outside. It was a beautiful day. I was going to go walk outside. I told multiple people, I just want to go get some fresh air. And outside of my building, I was chased by my sister, Brittany, who said, you got to come back in here. Charlie Kirk has just been shot. And I'm going, oh my God. Like, you know, I mean, your original is like, what, wait, what? Like, what, why? Why would somebody shoot Charlie Kirk? If it was like, you know, and I don't want to speak this into a, like, reality, and I'm not even going to say somebody else's name, but if you heard Stu Peters was shot today, it probably wouldn't be that hard to believe. Well, yeah, I mean, that guy's been taking on some pretty demonic forces. He's been talking about some pretty high-ranking government officials since 2020. He's been shining a light on these cockroaches for like 5 years. At some point, that's got to catch up to him. Yeah, no, it's never going to catch up to me. I put on the armor of God every day. Not to say that something couldn't happen in the natural. Look, I'm just going to get away from this. Anyways, what I was saying was, it came as a surprise because it's Charlie Kirk. Nobody expects a moderate like Charlie Kirk to be assassinated. And if I'm being quite honest and just point blank, there is no reason to assassinate Charlie Kirk other than the pretext, the conditions that that creates, that people would cheer on censorship, that people who have been free speech absolutists would cheer on the idea of people not only being censored and silenced on the internet and removed from polite society, but fired from their jobs and having their businesses shut down and then celebrating all of that happening. And then we have the unaddressed idea, the unaddressed fact that there was foreign intel and donor conflicts involved with all of this leading up to Charlie Kirk's assassination. No response to Harrison Smith's claim, which was well documented, and by the way, happened on more than one occasion. It didn't happen in a Harrison Smith vacuum where Charlie Kirk and Harrison Smith were the only ones ever talking. But a month prior to that, Harrison Smith had posted, had made a tweet on Twitter about Charlie Kirk's fears about Israel. There's been no investigation into Solomon's foreign intel report. And the official narrative is, nope, this is domestic only. This was a lone wolf, tranny-loving 22-year-old Tyler Robinson with a lazy eye. This guy is the guy that shot Charlie Kirk. This guy. That's also the head of the FBI, by the way. And you know, when you have these consistent lazy eye photos of Tyler Robinson, it just suggests that this is some sort of a fictitious or made up of whole cloth character that's playing a role in the movie that we're all watching. He's playing his part in this theatrical presentation. There's nothing that addresses Kirk's pivot from pro-Israel stances to questioning Jewish power, Jewish occupation, overrepresentation of Jews in our government, which have been kind of like hand-waved away from all of this, saying, well, Kirk was a moderate. Nick Fuentes says, well, Kirk was a moderate. He wasn't changing his stance, but he was. And on the record video documentation that's forever encapsulated in time shows that he was, in fact, questioning the multifaceted occupation. He was talking about Jewish supremacy, talking about secular Jews becoming the problem for all of the things that we're seeing in modern day society and within our modern day fake, illegitimate, pedophilic government. Charlie Kirk was absolutely talking about these things. As a matter of fact, he talked about these things to Ben Shapiro. And Ben Shapiro, the look on his face was just, you saw the eyebrow raise. Everybody's been talking about it. So the denial of all of this, or the refusal to entertain any of this, is a possible motive for Israel or for the Jew to take out Charlie Kirk, a guy who had betrayed them in their eyes, a guy who had previously been one of their greatest shills, and a guy who the prime minister, not some, you know, fundraising group, not AIPAC, not any billionaire donor, like some random Jew. The sitting prime minister of Israel, a head of state, Benjamin Netanyahu, offering to personally fund TPUSA to the tune of $150 million. And that's just like, yep, no, you're insane if you think that Israel had anything to do with this. The 2023 comments on Jewish funders of Marxism. All of this stuff. The narrative that Israel was protecting powerful interests of the elite is undeniable. It's not a conspiracy theory, and you're not crazy for thinking that. The ultimate trigger man here was the Jew. So this timeline is very revealing. And if you slow down and you take a look at all of these, and this is a short list that I was able to break down in just over an hour. But this list goes on and becomes more and more extensive and more weird. I mean, you can talk about the shape of the place looking like a menorah, which you cannot deny. You can talk about the fact that nobody can go back there for forensic or DNA analysis, because literally the next day they're in there with skid loaders destroying the entire scene, replacing the grass that Charlie Kirk died on with cement. They came in there with skid loaders and scraped off the entire surface, wiping away any DNA or forensic evidence that may have existed, and wiping away the opportunity for anybody ever, ever to go and do a constructive DNA or forensic analysis of the crime scene, which was never taped off, where there were never any yellow tape barriers being put up as a crime scene or a restricted area where people were not allowed to be into, including this Bartholomew, who's the guy who taped Andrew Colvett, that Grok says is a Jew, who is Turning Point USA's lead spokesman, that personally, physically interfered with the first person eyewitness testimony on film that was trying to be live streamed but couldn't because of another anomaly. And that's that everybody's cell service was just instantaneously wiped out within the moments leading up to Charlie Kirk's alleged assassination. All of these instances of withheld evidence and premature claims and logical impossibilities have rightly eroded public trust. Now, as of today, what is it, September 22nd, 2025, as of right now, tonight, this evening, as I'm streaming right now, the FBI probe remains active. And now there are active demands for a full declassification, warrants and raw footage. All of this stuff is growing, and it should. You should never take your foot off the gas. But mind you, you're never going to get the truth. They are just going to lie to you. No, Israel did not bomb the USS Liberty. They did not send multiple torpedoes at the USS Liberty on purpose. That was a mistake. They didn't come back over the top of the USS Liberty and drop napalm all over that deck on purpose. That was a mistake. They didn't circle back around and cut everyone on the deck of the USS Liberty to pieces with high caliber machine gun rounds. That was a mistake. You anti-Semite. You're anti-Semitic. Stop asking these questions. They didn't circle back around again as sailors were trying to flee for their lives in their lifeboats and spray machine gun rounds at them as well, committing an international war crime. They didn't do that on purpose. It was a mistake. It was mistaken identity. It was friendly fire from our greatest ally. And no, there will never be an official inquiry. There will never be an official investigation. And no member of Congress, again, ever will bring up the USS Liberty in any kind of serious context to hold anyone accountable. No, that will not happen. Despite the fact that 86,000 unredacted pages of the JFK files were released, where inside of them they say, quote, the Jew is responsible. The Jew is bad. Despite this irrefutable, undeniable physical evidence that's provided within the unredacted official government released JFK files, despite the fact that the finger blatantly points at the Jew, at Israel, and particularly, specifically the Jew is responsible. The Jew is bad. There will never be a serious inquiry. There will never be a serious inquisition. There will never be a serious investigation into JFK. That's the official story. That's the official narrative. Jack Ruby shot the shooter. Lee Harvey Oswald is dead. The case is closed. Don't ask any more questions. That's what happened, you anti-Semite. On September 11th, those towers came down because those planes flew into those buildings. That's why those towers came down. They came down because the planes flew into the buildings and because the heat, the jet fuel, the ignition, that process, it emitted heat that was just unsustainable for those steel beams and those towers, and they collapsed. No, they weren't dustified. Everything was lost. Everything was lost except for this passport. Don't ask any questions. We found the passport. They were Muslims. They were extremist radical terrorists of Islam. That's who those people were. Don't you dare ask any questions, you anti-Semite. That's what happened. Asking questions is anti-Semitic. Don't ask about the USS Liberty. That's anti-Semitic, you anti-Semite. Don't ask about 9/11. That's anti-Semitic. You anti-Semite, that's anti-Semitic. Don't ask about Charlie Kirk's assassination and who was ultimately responsible. Don't name all of the irrefutable. Don't name all of the circumstantial. Don't mention any of the physical evidence that would suggest that the Jew is responsible for silencing Charlie Kirk. Keep asking the questions. Keep demanding the raw footage. Why have we not seen the raw footage at minimum of Tyler Robinson on that rooftop in the 60 seconds before he fired that shot? Why do we not see Tyler Robinson taking up the position that Kash Patel told us that he took before firing that miraculous one round that severed the carotid artery of Charlie Kirk but did not pass through that steel bone structure like Superman? Why didn't we see it? I'm going to start going into some more of these anomalies in the very near future. And you all might think that I'm crazy because a lot of people have been conditioned not to think for themselves. I'll make no apologies. We're going to do it anyways. Thanks for being here.